Hey, it's Conrad Thompson, and you're listening to Tuesdays with the Taskmaster. And of course, we couldn't do it without one of the greatest minds in the history of professional wrestling, the one and only Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you, man?
I'm doing well, Conrad. How are you, my friend?
Man, better than I deserve. Excited to be with you today. There's so much for us to talk about. We've got a bunch of great questions for us to discuss, but right at the top of the show, I want to ask you, you did some appearances over the weekend. You made your way to Minnesota. How did it go?
I really enjoyed it. I haven't been to Minnesota in a while, and I had a great time, and the people up there were great. I had a lot of people ask me about your show. So,
Very nice. Well, I had a nice weekend myself. I got to catch up on a bunch of great wrestling, including an unbelievable match that I think people will be talking about for quite a while. Have you yet had a chance to see Ospreay and Danielson?
No, I'm going to watch it tonight.
I can't wait for you to see it and for you to give us your feedback. Of course, we know now, here's a spoiler for you. Swerve is the new AEW world champion. I, for one, have been on the Swerve train for quite a while. I'm so impressed with his work and look and presentation. I thought he was worthy of being the champ long ago. And I wanted to ask you what you think of Swerve. And then I want to talk to you a little bit about the importance of timing, because I've talked to a few people in and around the wrestling business, including some that are inside of AEW, and they felt like Swerve was hot and now we had cooled him off a little bit. And our pal Eric Bischoff talks a lot about having discipline and storytelling and being patient. And you and I know that sometimes in life and in sales and in business and relationships, timing is everything. Do you think that Swerve, did they wait too long to pull the trigger on Swerve? Or is that even a real thing? Can you wait too long? Can you miss the moment, Kevin?
I believe you can miss the moment. I'll give you an example. Do you remember when Taz and Sabu were teasing that match for about a year?
Yes.
I think they lost the momentum there. I think it would have been bigger if it was when they felt it was right. I think they lost momentum, but you mentioned about you being a Swerve fan. I met Swerve. I used to go to PCW Ultra once every 4 weeks, and I met him there. And I actually called him last week, wished him a happy birthday. I told him then he'd be a big star. The way he carries himself and the way his hand movements are, it's almost like he can get stuff over with his hands and his body language where you really think he's an arrogant son of a gun. But on the other hand, if he wants to be a babyface, I've seen him do both. When he's selling it, it looks like he's getting killed. This guy, and I agree with you, the belt should have been on him a long time ago. I just think, Conrad, like you do, you know, did they miss the mark? Maybe, but if anybody make up for that, it's this kid. He's terrific. He's a great guy. You know that.
Not only a great guy and a great performer, but a thoughtful guy too. Longtime wrestling fans will recognize that when Swerve made his way to the ring, even though he was doing maybe a little bit of Black Panther cosplay, which was clearly important to him, it was also important that he wore Jimmy Rave's robe. It was obviously a big part of Prince Nana's presentation in Ring of Honor and a real stalwart in Southern independent wrestling. And he had a great run with Ring of Honor. He left this world way, way, way too soon. Did you get to spend much time seeing any of Jimmy Rave's stuff? What'd you think of his work?
I thought it was terrific. I thought he was solid. And he could be very explosive when he worked, which is a big thing because kicking in a different gear makes people look at people differently. I'll give you the perfect example I tell people. If you want to see a gears being switched, watch Paul Orndorff's matches where he gets a guy down in the corner. He goes first to seventh gear in about 40 seconds. And I think that that was very nice of Swerve to do that too. My kudos to him. That's a class act.
Yeah, I was really, really impressed with what I saw with his performance and his presentation, his entire run of AEW. But boy, it got me in my feel seeing him wear Jimmy Rave's robe. I'm here for the Swerve era. And you'll also see when you sit down and watch the pay-per-view that they did reintroduce Jack Perry. I'm sure we'll be talking about that next week. I want to give you a chance to see that. Let's jump into some questions today, though. We got a bunch of good ones. Dylan Leahy wants to know a hypothetical for you. If you would have booked Eddie Guerrero versus Shawn Michaels, how would you have done it? And who goes over? Kevin, this is a match that Bruce Pritchard says he would have loved to have booked for a WrestleMania. And I guess in theory, we were supposed to get this, the WrestleMania after Eddie passed. Of course, it never happened. But if a match like that could have happened and you got to call it, what would you have done?
You know, this is not a cop-out, but no matter what you did for that finish, it had to be, in my mind, a clean finish, because they're going to give you a spectacular match, and a clean finish wouldn't hurt. You could come back and return. Just their personalities alone would have drawn Mike. So it would be a toss-up who goes over. You know, for a long time, and at the end of this WrestleMania, the babyfaces seem to, you know, get their comeuppance when it's their time. So I think that would Eddie have been the babyface then, or would he have been the heel? Who knows? But I thought Eddie was one of the greatest performers of all times. Everybody does. But I liked him as a heel better. Did you?
Yeah, I liked Eddie as a heel and as a baby, but I think I prefer him as a heel. But I prefer Sean as a heel. I thought Sean was at his best when he was getting ready to drop the title to Stone Cold in 98. And I realized that he had some personal problems he was going through at the time, and he was hurting. But the swagger he had was just unbelievable. Like, you believed that he was that cocky, young, arrogant leader DX. Like, you didn't have to suspend your disbelief for that version of Shawn Michaels.
Right. At that time, could there have been a better match?
No, I don't think so. I mean, that seems like the dream match of all dream matches to me.
Yeah. And I know, you talk about Brian Danielson and Ospreay.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure that if we had had that Eddie Shawn match, that might have been that match for this generation.
Yes, well said.
Yeah.
Adam has a question. He says, on last week's episode, you talked about AEW's lack of compelling storylines. Well, my interest in AEW began to wane following last year's All In pay-per-view. In my view, if AEW aimed to create a WrestleMania-esque spectacle in a 72,000 seat stadium, the main event should have centered on CM Punk versus MJF, title versus title, since both men were claiming to be the rightful champion. I sense a missed opportunity in not capitalizing on the potential narrative of who is the true AEW champion for such a big event, especially after CM Punk returned from injury late that year. Who and the champion who never lost, carrying around his own belt. What's your take on this? Kevin, to throw my two cents in, I kind of thought it was weird that we had a main event where the guys were not in some sort of a blood feud. They were friends. I'm not saying it wasn't a compelling storyline, but I am going to say for a big spectacle, a WrestleMania like show with that many people, I needed there to be more quote unquote heat for the main event. I needed a good guy and a bad guy. I wanted to pull for a guy. I wanted to boo a guy. I wanted Cody versus Roman, but the AEW version, and Punk versus MJF, we never got to see. That would have been a great place and a huge crowd to do it. I don't know how it would have affected everything that we saw. Maybe it would have happened that way. Maybe it wouldn't, because in theory, Punk might not be standing there getting ready to go through the curtain.
Right.
What say you? What'd you think of them going with MJF and Adam Cole? Do you think it would have been received better if it was MJF and CM Punk in the main event?
Here's what my thought process on that is. Was it less than 6 months later that Adam turned heel?
Yes.
Why waste that? Do you know what I mean? I think they might have missed the shot there. If they had to know 6 months out that Adam was going to be a heel, why do that match anyway? When I'm with you, you could have had. And when you draw that kind of house, I think the people want to be relieved at the end of the night. They want a good guy versus bad guy. They want heat going into the show. They want you to pile the heat on, put the babyface in a predicament that can he win this one? Like we saw with Cody this year. He overcame all the obstacles and the people went crazy. I think that's what they might have should have done there, especially when you turn Adam heel 6 months down the line. That just, you should have kept something in your back pocket rather than blowing that and beating him.
Let's do another question here. Tony Flowers says, was there ever an enhancement talent you worked with that was so good, so impressive that you couldn't figure out why they were stuck doing jobs for folks? Was there a guy who you felt like had what it took to be a bigger star? He was just, for whatever reason, in a different lot in life.
I'm sure, you know, Rick has mentioned this. Everybody's mentioned this. Why Brad Armstrong didn't get the bigger push he did. The only thing I can think about is he was such a witty guy and such a incredible worker that maybe at that time that he was getting a little bit of a push, his interviews were not up to par. But Conrad, you've seen him work 1,000 times. He was the best worker in that family, and they had some great workers. Rick tells me that he thinks Brad and him matches were the top five that he ever had.
That doesn't surprise me. You talk to almost no one who isn't a huge advocate of how talented Brad Armstrong was. And they tried a few different silly gimmicks with him in WCW. Is there a gimmick out there that you think would have really worked for Brad? They just put it on the wrong guy.
I think if they just made him Brad Armstrong, carry the Armstrong's name, go into a storyline of all the brothers, you know what I mean? The father. And this kid was, I trained him when he was entered the Mr. Georgia bodybuilding contest.
Wow.
He was a phenomenal athlete. You couldn't blow him up. I mean, he could stay with Rick, and that's saying something. Not many people can stay with Rick. And he was just probably, here's what happened. After they kind of forgot about him, a guy comes in and they say, okay, we've given him 4 squash matches. Who are we going to put him with to elevate him? Everybody says Brad. So then he falls into that routine. Bring another guy in. Who are we going to put him with to elevate him? Brad. We didn't take advantage of any, and I'm talking about everybody in the business, how talented Brad was. If he couldn't talk, maybe we could have. I'm sure he would have been a great heel because he was a wise ass too. And he had a great personality. They could have made him a heel because he really deserved better.
We got a lot of questions about enhancement talents this week. Bryant has one. He says, enhancement guys usually don't get recognition they deserve. In Jim Crockett Promotions, the most famous are probably the Mulkeys and George South. Who are some other enhancement talents or job guys you saw or worked with that you felt were some of the best?
Well, there was in the Tennessee area, especially East Tennessee area, there was a guy, Canyon, his last name was Billy Canyon. and he was very good. In Florida, there was Alex Mendina. He was Puerto Rican descent. He was very good. There was a lot of guys that back in the territorial days stayed in the territory. Most of them had jobs and they wanted to raise their families there. And they just became great enhancement guys. And there was always a couple in every territory from Florida, Amarillo to LA to Portland. It was very important to have that kind of talent around.
When you're thinking about enhancement talent that you worked with, I'm talking about in the WCW days, because there were some episodes where you guys were doing filming down in Orlando. You're doing those Disney tapings with the rotating ring. Pro, I think, is one of the shows that was taped down there. And man, if you go through there, you'll see you worked with a whole lot of folks, including a very young Adam Copeland. You beat the absolute ever loving shit out of a future Edge down there. It's one of my favorite things to show people who've never seen it before. Do any enhancement talent you worked with in WCW that you were particularly brutal to stand out?
Well, I don't think I was brutal. I was trying to get over. And at that time I was locked in with Hogan. So I had a kind of kick it.
Make it look good. Yeah.
But Adam is a tremendous, tremendous performer. I pop every time I see him. He's had a great career and came back after very serious injuries. So I can't do anything but give him the flowers he deserves.
There's a lot of great flowers to go around. Let's talk about some here from Simon C. Would it add any value to have really good ex-pro wrestlers as the referees in development help the younger talent, or would it be a distraction for the fans? That's an interesting question, because I remember about 10 years ago, they had Ric Flair being like a special guest referee in WWE for matches between like John Cena and Bray Wyatt and things like that. And I'm sure that having Flair in there with a young and developing Bray Wyatt would be helpful. That's a decent idea. And I know that we would see a lot of former wrestlers become referees, but why don't you think that was more common? It does feel like a dedicated profession these days.
I'm not even sure why it isn't. I think that's a great question. I mean, I've never even debated that in my head. It was a great question to bring up, and I think it will work.
Yes.
Maybe not on Rick's
level,
because he's takes your eyes off of everybody. But a guy that had a very good career, yeah, you could, it would help the guys, especially if you had two young guys that you're trying to push that could get lost in the ring. I think that's a great idea. Kudos.
Even if there was connective tissue with one of the other members of the match, it lends itself to a lot of storytelling opportunities. Not saying it was recent history, but if they had ancient history and the referee wasn't, I could see that. Great idea.
Yeah, it is.
Simon C wants to know, what was it like the first time you wrestled at Madison Square Garden? Were you calling all your friends and family to let them know, or was it just another day at the office by that point?
It was never another day at the office when you went to the Madison Square Garden. It was, you know, Madison Square Garden, the mecca of pro wrestling, pro boxing. It was great. I really enjoyed my time there.
A wrestling historian says, was there ever talk of having Paul Orndorff feud with Hogan for the WCW title, or maybe even having him join the Dungeon of Doom? That's interesting. I never considered that, but they did have a heck of a run in New York, including that fabulous record that still stands to this day, I think, in Canada. Right. Was there ever any consideration to Hogan versus Orndorff, even as a one-off in WCW, as best you can recall?
There should have been. I think there was a little bit of a problem at the time.
I got you.
Yeah. with you-know-who and Paul. So, I mean, you brought up something that people don't even realize about. I think it was Toronto.
That's right.
They thought they were going to draw about 10,000 people because they had gone around for a couple of years and feud was over. They went, didn't they draw close to 70,000 people?
Yeah, it was absurd, dude. The amount of people there, 61,470 fans inside the Exhibition Stadium, August 28th, 1986, the big event in Toronto.
We should have done it. Even if we did half of it, we would have been great.
So it was at least mentioned, but somebody stroked the old Fu Manchu and thought, not today, brother.
Yeah, I think so.
Keith Morrison says, on the latest episode, you and Conrad talked about the Three Tower of Fear with Hogan and Savage against the Dungeon of Doom. In 88, Crockett had the Three Towers and the Great American Bash, but World Class had the Triple Cage first. The old rumor is that Michael Hayes left Crockett and stole the idea. Is that rumor true?
It may be. If they had it first, it might have been. Huh. And I was doing the angle originally was me and Jimmy. So maybe Jimmy had talked to Michael about it.
I see.
But it doesn't matter who took it or what. As long as it drew money, that's what was the most important thing.
Adam's been listening, and he says on last week's episode, Conrad mentioned the stark contrast between Japanese and American wrestling, being that in Japan, the storytelling predominantly unfolds in the ring, while in America, it mainly takes place on the microphone. Considering this difference, what are your thoughts on fans who just like the in-ring action and aren't interested in intricate storytelling and angles? Furthermore, why do you believe Japanese fans seem to require fewer gimmicks and storylines to be entertained when compared to American fans? That's interesting. Why can they get away with it just being wrestlers in boots and trunks in Japan? And maybe we need a little more showbiz here in America. Why do you think that is?
I think it's the culture. They have a saying, the Japanese, that the nail that's standing up should be pounded down. And their culture has had a dramatic change since the late 60s to now. But the other thing is the storylines, meaning most of them start, Conrad, see if I'm right, most of them start on interviews, right? Well, yes. They didn't have many interviews because the Japanese talent, somehow that didn't fit into the culture, insulting somebody like that. So none of them really learned how to talk. So they had to make it work in the ring. And they took the wrestling business, the Japanese fans, as maybe it's not all real, but Baba was real and Loki was real. And New Japan really pushed that they were a legitimate sport. They tried to blur the lines with Inoki's shoot fighting thing. So I think that has a lot to do with the in-ring talent means the most. And if you watch Japanese tapes, when they do these big moves, the people go crazy. It's like, whoa, they're taking them themselves and kicking out themselves. It's a fascinating, different point of view of how to enjoy an art form than what we do in the United States, mostly what we do.
Adam has a follow-up question. After Turner purchased Jim Crockett Promotions, a mass exodus of talent soon departed WCW for the WWF. That included Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, Dusty Rhodes, Barry Windham, Terry Taylor, Ron Garvin, even Tony Schiavone and JJ Dillon. Let's say you had left WCW along with them. How do you think you would have fared working for Vince during that late 80s era? So we'll call it 89, 90, 91. You think you would have fit in the WWF? How would you have enjoyed working for Vince then, if you had to guess?
I'm not sure. I really am not. I'm not trying to avoid the question, but I always try to do my job the best of my ability. If he's signing the checks, so I know it's his ideas, I got to make them work to the best of my ability. So I don't think I would have had a problem. The only thing I think I would have had a problem is their schedule was so brutal. I was just with Tito Santana this weekend. And, you know, you forget how brutal they were. And Tito was telling me, you know, they were working Monday through Friday. And Saturday and Sunday, they were doing double shots.
Wow.
And he said there was one time, I believe he said to me, that he wrestled 74 days, and some of them were double shots, without a day off. That's a heavy schedule.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Ron Ward says, Conrad does a podcast called The False Finish, where he interviews former wrestlers who are no longer in the spotlight. Who does Kevin think would be some amazing guests for it? You know, we've talked to a few guys over the years. Maybe my first one was almost an accident. We talked about Wildcat Chris Harris. Of course, most people remember he had a cup of coffee in the WWF as Braden Walker. Never felt like he got a fair shake, and I was always such a big fan of what he did in TNA that we sat down and did an interview, and the result, Kevin, is we created like a new series. And we've got one in the can now, and I'm talking to another fellow here in the next few days. Does anybody stand out to you that you think had a really interesting story after wrestling, who maybe didn't get a fair shake inside of wrestling?
Well, he's got more than a fair shake in wrestling, was Kevin Nash.
Yeah.
Kevin Nash, after wrestling, didn't miss a beat. Kevin is the ultimate Renaissance man. He can talk to you about wine. He can talk to you about art. He can talk to you about sports. And he's gone through some great times. He's gone through some very low times, but he's come out the other end. And he has a very interesting story. Conrad, he used to be a heavyweight champion out of Knoxville called John Tate. Does that ring a bell to you?
No.
Well, he won the belt in South Africa when they had just lifted apartheid. He was a black man. Kevin used to spar with him. Kevin played pro basketball in the NBA league in Europe. Kevin was a soldier. He was a military police guy. He was a bodybuilder. I mean, Kevin's done it all, and he hasn't missed a beat getting out of the wrestling business. But
I guess I ever thought about that. I knew about the military stint. I knew about the college basketball. I knew about pro wrestling and acting. But yeah, I didn't know he used to spar with a bronze medalist. That's a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, John Tate was the world heavyweight champion.
Yeah.
Pro. Yeah. Was he bronze medalist too, John Tate? I think you're right.
I just looked it up. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Carl Hayes says, the Bruins ended the season with back-to-back bad games. Game one and possibly two versus Toronto will have taken place by the time this drops. What are your thoughts on the Bruins' path to the cup this year?
I think it's going to be tough. For some reason, it's almost like the Celtics last few years. They get so close and fall on a banana peel. I hope they don't get the old Bambino curse, pick it up, you know. So good luck to them. But
since we're talking a little sports here, I wanted to ask you, what'd you make of the report that allegedly Bill Belichick was having some pretty serious conversations with Arthur Blank and the Eagles, and allegedly Robert Kraft picked up the phone, called ownership, and said, you want no part of being in business with Bill Belichick. Supposedly they kiboshed the deal for him. Have you heard this rumor that perhaps Robert Kraft undermined Bill Belichick's future employment opportunity? What do you make of that report?
I heard about it, and I believe it could be very true.
Yeah, me too.
You know, he was close. Kraft was very close to Brady.
Yes.
He didn't want him to leave.
No.
But Belichick was not bringing the people in. I think he must have had some kind of percentage. If you get this, the nut down, we'll give you 10% or something. Because he really let guys go, wait, I'm not saying you keep them until you run them dry, but you go back to Malloy, you go back to Butler.
Law.
Bobby?
Law. I mean, there were many great bits of
players. Mean, you go back because they wanted to get paid. And the last couple of years that he was in New England, Brady didn't have anybody to throw the ball or hand the ball to.
What a block for.
Yeah, and I think that Kraft was incensed that Bill wouldn't protect Brady for leaving.
Have you seen that Apple documentary series, Dynasty?
Yes.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
They did such a great job with that. Lauren Eason has a great question for you. He says, we've talked about some of the great factions here on the program, but what are Kevin's thoughts on the Nexus? I don't remember us ever talking about Nexus.
Yeah.
What do you think of them?
Do you think their timing was off? They were coming off of, correct me if my timeline's wrong, weren't they coming after the NWO and DX?
Oh, way after. Yeah, that was in 2011 right there.
Yeah, so you're trying to come back after two of the most powerful groups ever. And I don't think they ever kind of gave us a pecking order. You know, I think if they had gave us a pecking order, but trying to follow that thing, you'd have to go in a different way. And we saw now that done right, it can carry a company for over 3 years, keep a guy a champion over 1,000 years, and lead into multiple pay-per-views that are going to draw a lot of money. But they did it on heat, where they would start to, if I can remember right, they would start to get the little run and then someone would bump them off and then they'd rebuild it. That's not a way to do it if you got a, and that isn't me just saying that. It's been a tried and true situation that if you bring a group together, you got to make them not only a dynasty, you have to make them really, really serious killers.
Brian says, I've been watching a lot of championship wrestling from Florida, and I noticed that Gordon Soley keeps calling Dusty Stardust. Was that the nickname the office wanted to get over more, or was it Dusty? Was it normal for people to try to get over multiple nicknames? Talk to me about Gordon calling Dusty Stardust.
Dusty had a brand new Cadillac. It was painted white and red and had a couple of blue stars in the back, and that was Stardust. I think that was Dusty trying to lay down a story that he wanted maybe the office to buy a plane. And later on, Crockett did buy a couple of planes, and one of them was Stardust. So maybe he was testing the waters.
It's a little crazy to think about. Barrett Sanderson says, hey, love the show. Such incredible insights. I've always been curious about the term technical wrestler. In Kevin's opinion, is someone who's super smooth in the ring, like a Bret Hart, a more technical wrestler than someone who's got all the techniques of pro wrestling down pat, from selling to storytelling, like Steve Austin? Talk to me about that. How would you define technical wrestler? Are there some examples you could cite for that style, at least what comes to your mind, Kevin?
Well, I think he brought two of them when he said Bret Hart. Bret was a technical wrestler. He could change and integrate anything. Austin, they had the match together where Steve went in as the heel and came off the babyface, and vice versa, right?
Yes.
That's a very hard thing to do, especially when they've been cheering you for years and booing you for a few years. That is technical wrestling. Rick was a great technical wrestler, even though he was a heel. He could work with anybody. He could make anybody look good. The Hart and Stone Cold, without a doubt, could make almost anybody look good.
Barrett has another question. How would you book the Wyatt Six if the likes of Eric Rowan and Matt Hardy do come back? Thanks as always. Of course, we saw over the weekend Matt Hardy return as Broken Matt Hardy to TNA in Las Vegas. I was pretty excited about that. But if this Wyatt Six becomes a thing, and we certainly saw a tease with Uncle Howdy at the end of the Bray Wyatt documentary, and then allegedly we saw something on Raw a couple of weeks ago, maybe some clues that they're coming back. And we even saw some folks canceling some appearances. So it makes me wonder, how would Kevin Sullivan bring back the Bray Wyatt legacy with Bo and Eric Rowan and maybe Matt Hardy? Have you put any thought into that?
No, but I have. I shouldn't say no. I thought this is going to be very, very, not impossible, but close impossible to follow.
It is.
This Wyatt angle, he was way ahead of his time. He entertained people like nobody else in years. The Undertaker said he should have been the one to beat him for the streak. Where do you go with this where people don't say, oh, that's good, but wasn't as good as Bray? Conrad, what's your take on that? Can they ever? Go ahead. Sorry.
I don't think they can do it. I'm with you. It feels like you're, respectfully, we saw them try to do a storyline around Rey Mysterio winning the world title for his fallen friend, Eddie Guerrero. And so instead of it being about Eddie winning the world title, everyone was talking about, or rather than Rey, it being about Rey winning the world title, everyone was talking about Eddie.
Right.
And trashing Eddie's death and sort of mocking Ray for that. It was less about Ray winning the title is what I'm trying to say. And it feels like no matter what we do here, people are always going to make the comparisons and they're going to say, yeah, but so I do think on some level, we probably wind up pigeonholing Bo Dallas and other folks. If we're not careful, I think that's what you're saying there, right?
Absolutely. I mean, and the trolls will have a field day on this, I think. Not that that matters, but, you know, it's going to be very, very hard. To me, they're all a tightrope. One side's ice, one side's fire. They got to make, if they're going to, they can't go so far that they turn the people off. Because, like you said, these guys are pigeonholed. These guys deserve a chance. It must be a safety valve. I think before you do an angle this heavy, do you think, Conrad, you need a safety valve?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, I do too.
Mark Bishop says, I asked this question to Arn and he had no answer and never thought about it. So I'll ask you, how do wrestlers not get sick? I never hear them cough, clear their throat, sneeze, have a stuffy nose, etc. And they travel to different areas, which causes allergies to a degree. What is the secret? That's something I never really thought about, but as much travel as guys do, you think that just builds up their immune system because they're in a ring and on a canvas rolling around where so many other guys and, you know, they're in a locker room and then they're going to shake all these hands of all these fans and the guardrails have been touched by everybody. The road cases have been touched by everybody. You're in mass transportation on airports and airport terminals and airplanes and rental cars. Do you think wrestlers, perhaps with all the travel, just strengthen their immune system that way?
I actually believe that's true. I actually believe that's true because very seldom did I ever hear or remember a guy not showing up for town because he was sick. Maybe he didn't show up for town because he broke his ankle the night before. But I don't ever remember anybody calling in that they had a cold. Or I think there's something to that, Conrad, what you said. You travel all over the country, different places. You're in a plane. You're shaking everybody's hands. You roll around on a mat that people have been all over. I think it probably does build up your immune system.
There's some news that came out this morning. I know you probably haven't seen it, but there was a press release put out by WWE that announced that, although they didn't say it, they had a pay-per-view set up for NXT in Augusta, Georgia in June. And it was supposed to be the day before a Monday Night Raw was there. That's what we thought was going to happen. In reality, it's announced that NXT Battleground is going to happen at the UFC Apex out in Las Vegas on Sunday, June 9th. And a lot of people are wondering, does this mean that might signal a move? Perhaps NXT wouldn't just be in Florida. Maybe they would have some Las Vegas operations since UFC has a home base there. Perhaps that would serve some TKO purpose. I for one think Las Vegas would be great. Maybe they're going to start doing more shows there. I've even thought in recent years, the next iteration of WWE, I could see it being a Vegas show, like a certain play or something like that. They have a residency at some hotel or what have you. I mean, I know Dorian is trying that in AAA in a mall down there in Cancun right now. I'm curious, what do you make of them moving a show, not only from Georgia to Las Vegas, but at the UFC Apex? I mean, this is another piece of that cross-pollinization we all thought might happen a year ago with the TKO announcement. What do you make of this?
Well, here's my thing. I think, don't you think, Conrad, that it's a bit of, let's try to go to Vegas and see what we draw. If we're talking about maybe next WrestleMania being there, let's see what kind of interest we have here.
Well, anything they're going to announce the WrestleMania there. I believe they're going to announce WrestleMania at that NXT show.
Okay.
So the Undertaker sort of spoiled it on his podcast last week, where he just matter of fact told his co-host, so next year's WrestleMania is in Vegas. And then a few minutes later realizes, oops, maybe I shouldn't have said that. So I think the beans have been spilled, and I like the idea of a Vegas WrestleMania going back there for the first time since WrestleMania 9. And obviously this is going to look like a much different show, but I do think that there's going to be a longer, more permanent WWE presence in Vegas sooner rather than later. Would that surprise you?
Not at all, because you had a great analogy why, but do you know what jumped out at me, Conrad? You see what? Where they got that high speed train from LA to Vegas?
Yes.
It's going to be less than an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So they got everything's falling to place. Plus, you're falling into your partnership with UFC. You're going into a place that draws nothing but tourists. The high-speed trains coming there. They went from not having a sports team to having a hockey team.
Yes.
A football team. And now we're going to be a baseball team.
Absolutely.
I mean, and as you know, it's right down the street, the football stadium.
Yes.
It's pretty amazing what they're doing. And I believe, well, if the Undertaker said it's going to be in Vegas, it's in Vegas.
Yes.
And I think the other thing, Conrad, is, you know, like you said about the training center. Well, you're making everybody in the world move to Florida, when there's plenty young talent on the West Coast, and some of them are very good, but maybe they don't have the wherewithal to get a tryout in Florida or whatever. I think it's a great idea.
I wanted to ask you about the releases that have happened in WWE as well. Since you and I clicked record, there's been a handful. Von Wagner, that was a multi-generation star. He has been released by WWE. So is Jinder Mahal. He's a former WWE world champion who just knocked it out of the park earlier this year with The Rock. And most of their other talent of Indian descent, all no longer a part of WWE. And at first, when I saw that there was a contingent of Indian talent, I thought, well, this is an angle. They're going to set up some sort of a takeover for that new speed show, or they're going to do something in NXT. This is going to be an angle, and it's going to be a way to sort of re-engage that audience that we've heard for years dominates like YouTube viewing. I mean, I've even heard, I don't know if this is true, but I've heard that certain wrestling companies actually now block their programming from being seen in India because it hurts their ad revenue. But there's so many folks who consume WWE programming over there. And a lot of people say it's because of, you know, they're scantily clad and pornography is not a thing there. I don't know. I just know there's an appetite for the product in India. And seemingly WWE has said, we're out of that game now. What'd you make of that report?
Do you think the great Khali is, he's still running over there, isn't he?
He is, yes.
Do you think he has some backing from the WWE?
Now that's something I hadn't considered. That's an interesting idea.
I like your idea of a takeover. Yeah. What if these guys go back and work with Khali and then the WWE comes in there and they have, if they're supporting Khali, they can get the finishes they want and maybe create, you know, a way to give Khali's group a shot because they're going to be the baby faces. It would be, I think that may be the way that, I don't know how you let Jinder Mahal go. That's just me. I don't know.
If you were Tony Khan, would you hire Jinder Mahal immediately because of their little Twitter spat earlier this year?
Absolutely.
I would too.
Yeah.
Now, if we're going to go down that line of thinking, that brings up the natural conversation. If you're going to hire Jinder because of that Twitter interaction, does that mean you also make Tony Khan a television character?
You know, Conrad, I've been thinking about that for the last 2-3 weeks. He's, you know, like he said, WWE and AEW should hate each other. He's made some outlandish statements. I don't think that showing the Punk thing that most people sided with Tony. I think they sided with Punk. I think that he could be, as much as I hate the boss to be involved in it, it works. I think he could be very good at it.
I, for one, am interested to see where it goes. I'm a big fan of Jinder. If you're listening to this and you have a chance to meet Jinder Mahal at an autograph signing or a meet and greet or at a wrestling show in your area in the coming months, I encourage you to go. He is a great guy, universally loved by the WWE locker room. You may not have liked his presentation in WWE, but he's in charge of that now. As you all know, he was not in charge of his presentation in the WWE, but he is now. And I, for one, am pulling for him to have one heck of a run here outside of WWE. If this isn't an angle, and I think you and I are aligned, and we never want to see anybody lose their job. So if this is the end, boy, I hope that Jinder's in AEW sooner rather than later. And Tony Khan as a television character seems inevitable. I know he said he wasn't going to do that, but we saw him on TV just a few weeks ago in Gorilla with the Young Bucks, and it was a skit. It wasn't him as the owner. It was him as Tony Khan, wink, wink, the wrestling promoter. I think that could be interesting, but I know that part of that is going to require, I think, that he leans in, because to a large portion of the internet wrestling community, they see him as a heel simply for having a wrestling company, which is crazy. If you were going to book that, would you make Tony a heel or a babyface?
Oh, he has to be a heel. he'd have to be a heel. I mean, he has so much going for him to be a heel and so easy. You know, he can do almost like the final boss thing with The Rock. You work for me. I mean, it could be very interesting. It may give them a little bit of a spark too, Conrad.
Well, it just seems like they could lean into it, you know, like that's the way it looks for Jericho. Jericho is responding to all of the negativity that he sees, and he's just leaning into it. You'll see what I'm talking about when you watch his match with Hook from the pay-per-view over the weekend.
I actually read about that today when I got up. He has been the ultimate chameleon in the wrestling business.
Yes.
He's been able to change and keep up with the times. He makes negatives, positives. He's done an incredible job.
I, for one, would love to see him as a television character if he'll really lean into it. Because listen, if people are already talking about it, it's right there in front of you. It's low hanging fruit. Why not do it? That's my thinking. But I don't know that he would be comfortable being a heel. We'll have to see, but I don't think he could be anything else. I mean, I know that in wrestling, you know, parlance, you got heels and babyface. It's hard to be a sympathetic billionaire, Kevin. Like you're a heel just because of your socioeconomic class.
Right. Yes, absolutely. And he could use that as his preaching stone, you know. Yeah, I mean, he could tell a story. When I was growing up, some days when I was being chauffeured to school in elementary, the heater wouldn't get over 76. There was something wrong with the engine. I mean, there's so much that he could do with that.
Well, it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm pulling for Jinder, and I can't wait to discuss Will Ospreay and Brian Danielson with you next week. If you've got a question for Kevin, drop it below. We'll be back next week taking all your questions. Hopefully we'll have some more about Cody and AJ Styles as we start to home stretch it for that big pay-per-view. And before you know it, man, Double or Nothing right around the corner with Mercedes Moné. It's crazy to think as you and I are talking right now, Kevin, I don't think the WWE has another PLE in America until SummerSlam. How about that?
Yeah. And aren't they going to Paris and Germany? And I mean,
it's crazy. They're all over the place.
Yeah.
It's an international. Absolutely. Great for wrestling fans and great for us here on adfreeshows.com. We're grateful that you guys dropped us some questions. Drop some below and we'll be back next week, right on time here at Tuesday with the Taskmaster.